So the agenda here, item 8, educational presentation on the Brown Act. Karen.
Thank you. We have a slide presentation for you today, and you have copies of the slide presentation in your agenda packet. This is meant to be an educational session to review the Brown Act that governs this board's open meetings. Please feel free to stop me and ask questions if you have questions at any time. And so we'll start with slide number 2 and explain that the Brown Act governs open meetings held by local legislative bodies in California. So it applies to the CSERA Board of Retirement, it applies to your city council and your county board of supervisors, special districts. The CSERA Board of Retirement is subject to the Brown Act. Let's talk about the purpose of the Brown Act. It's to ensure that the agency actions are taken openly and that agency deliberations are conducted openly. The key concepts of the Brown Act are that retirement board meetings must be open and accessible to the public. A board meeting agenda must be posted publicly. And during board meetings, the public must be given an opportunity to comment. So these key concepts have to do with notice ahead of time to the public about the board meeting, the location, what the items will be that the board will take up, as well as an opportunity, providing an opportunity to the public to attend the meeting, to make public comment, and in that way participate in the agency's deliberations. So first we'll focus on the fact that the meeting has to be open and accessible to the public, and we need to talk about the definition of a meeting. So what we have here today is a meeting. We have a quorum of the board sitting here. We had an agenda that was posted, so the public is aware that this meeting is taking place and this meeting is open to the public. But in addition, a meeting also means a serial use of communication, for example, email or social media or any other way of using communication or technological devices through which a majority of the board's members discuss, deliberate, or take action on an item. So this came about because if you can picture it, let's take a city council, for example. They have their city council meetings at City Hall, but what if a city council member has a dinner at their house and invites some of the other city council members? And what if at that point they start talking about some item within their jurisdiction and they start having a discussion there? Well, that could qualify as a meeting under the Brown Act, and that really should have been done in a way that comports with the Brown Act, meaning an agenda should have been posted ahead of time, and the public should have had an opportunity to know about the meeting and to attend and to make public comment. Another example that we talk about is an unlawful serial meeting that can occur if board member A, for example, emails board member B about his or her position on the retirement board issue. B forwards A's email to C, who then forwards it to D, who then forwards it to E. Now you have a serial communication. It's not everybody all at the same time. It's A to B, B to C, but you do have this serial communication that ends up being a meeting, and it really should be something that takes place at an open meeting like today, with an agenda having posted and the public being given an opportunity to attend and to participate by making a public comment. So I want to talk about the attendance and at conferences, because the board members do occasionally attend conferences, and that's okay. A majority of the retirement board members may attend a conference or similar gathering open to the public that involves a discussion of issues of general interest to the public or to other public pension systems, so long as the majority of the board members do not discuss among themselves business that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the retirement board. So an example is SACRS coming up next week. So long as that conference is open to the public, the majority of the board members can attend, but they cannot discuss among themselves at SACRS an issue that is a retirement board issue. Why? That is a discussion that needs to be held in this forum in an open meeting where an agenda has been posted and the public been given an opportunity to attend and participate.
Karen?
Yes.
Sorry. Just clarification. So let's say we go to a SACRS conference and there's an item that's talking about a legal update or briefing or something like that. It's technically under the retirement system. But I mean, let's say Harvey's at the conference and he gave a presentation about legislation or something. Jerry and I are talking about it at the conference. It's technically under the purview of the retirement board. However, it's related specifically to the conference. Would that be in violation?
No, because you don't only have two members discussing that.
Okay,
item.
So it's either a serial or
serial a or a, you know, five members talking to each other at
Got
the
it.
Same time.
Okay, just wanted to be. Mm-hmm.
But it's best not to. It's hard to know when something can turn into a serial communication because you could innocently talk to Jerry, and then outside of your presence, Jerry could innocently talk to someone else, another board member, and then again, we might see the serial communication. So we have to be very careful.
Understood.
And the Brown Act also allows the attendance at a purely social event. Provided that the majority of the retirement board members do not discuss among themselves business that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the retirement board. The Brown Act also requires that the board must publicly report any action taken and the vote or abstention of each member present for the action. Now we're going to focus on the agenda requirement. So that's the notice part of the Brown Act. So again, we have the notice and the opportunity to attend. We're focusing on the notice, and that's the agenda. The Brown Act says that at least 72 hours before a regular meeting of the board, an agenda containing a general description of each item of business to be transacted, including items to be discussed, and the time and location of the meeting must be posted in a public location and on the SACERA website. That's very important. There is something new, a new legislative change that would apply to board meetings occurring on or after January 1, 2019. And that is that the agenda must be accessible through a prominent direct link on the SACERA website. So I think this is intended to make sure that agencies don't place the agenda on the website in a place that is not that accessible, so that someone has to really search hard until they find the agenda on the agency's website. So the legislature would like to see that the agencies put the agenda up front, just one link, one click, and you're there on the agenda. That again goes to the notice to the public and making it easier for the public to find the agenda and know what the government is planning on discussing. So if an item is not included on the agenda, then the retirement board may not act on or discuss that item or add that item to the meeting's agenda as an urgency item, subject to limited exceptions. So normally, you know, we have the agenda and it's supposed to give notice to the public of the board is going to be discussing item 1, 2, 3, 4. Item 6 that's not on the agenda cannot be discussed. That would be a violation of the Brown Act, generally. But there are some exceptions. So the retirement board members and staff may ask a question for clarification, make a brief announcement, or make a brief report. And the retirement board members may provide a reference to staff or other resources for factual information, request staff to report back to the body at a subsequent meeting concerning any matter, or take action to direct staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. So that allows the board to briefly have provide an instruction or ask for information or say, you know, subject matter X is not on today's agenda, but I would like a staff report at some point in the future that addresses it. I would like to see it on the agenda. So that's okay. So now we go to the public comment part, and that's where the public will have an opportunity to participate, if they wish, in the board meeting in the form of making public comment. And so during each meeting, the retirement board must allow public comment on each agenda item and on other matters within the jurisdiction of the board. The Brown Act says that the board may limit the time on public comment. And there's another new rule, and that is that if the board places limits on public comment time, the board must provide at least twice as much of the allocated time to members of the public who utilize a translator. So if someone comes up and wants to make public comment and they're using a translator, and the board is limited public comment time to 3 minutes, for example, then that person using a translator would need to be receiving 6 minutes, double the time that a regular member of the public would receive.
Karen, would the member of the public need to provide their own translator, or are we required to provide that?
They can provide their own. I don't know that we would provide one for them unless we knew ahead of time and had a reason to.
Okay.
So now we're going to talk about closed sessions. And so what we talked about thus far is allowing the public notice and an opportunity to attend, but there are some exceptions to that. The Brown Act authorizes the board to meet in closed session outside of the public for certain with certain situations. And so examples are the board may meet in closed session to deliberate or take action on the purchase or sale of a particular specific pension fund investment. The retirement board may meet in closed session on personnel matters. The retirement board can hold a closed session with CSERA's designated representatives regarding employee salaries, benefits, but cannot take final action in closed session. So any final action on salaries and benefits has to be done in open session. And the retirement board may meet in closed session to confer with legal counsel regarding pending litigation that has been formally initiated, exposure to litigation against CSERA or the board, and to decide whether to initiate litigation. And one thing that we need to keep in mind is that closed session discussions and decisions are confidential, with the exception of the report out that the board chair delivers. The board chair will report when there is a reportable action out to the public. What is being discussed in closed session and what is being decided in closed session is strictly confidential. Are there any questions thus far? So now we're going to talk about the consequences of violating the Brown Act. The Brown Act and following all these procedural, technical, you know, notice requirements, agenda requirements, what gets put on the internet website, allowing public comment, all of that is so important that the legislature actually imposed a criminal liability for individual board members violating the Brown Act. So there's civil criminal liability, but also civil remedies that are able to be obtained in cases of violation of the Brown Act. And typically, if the plaintiff prevails in arguing that the agency violated the Brown Act, attorney fees and costs will be awarded to the plaintiff.
Karen, question?
Yes.
How can an individual board member, for example, become criminally liable for a non-notice or a violation of the Brown Act that's committed by the system as a whole?
For the criminal violation, the standard is that there has to be an intent on the part of the board member. I'm on the right slide, slide number 16. There has to be each retirement board member who attends a retirement board meeting where an action is taken in violation of any provisions of the Brown Act where the member, that the trustee, intends to deprive the public of information to which the member knows or has reason to know the public is entitled to under the Brown Act, is guilty of a misdemeanor. So there has to be an intent on the part of the board member to deprive this information. That's, you know, the DA, I guess, would have to show that that's the case.
So there is kind of a self-policing requirement in the Brown Act that everybody around the board has an obligation to self-police the activities of the board.
Yes.
Is there a provision in the Brown Act for some kind of emergency meeting process, or is it 72 hours the kind of the shortest time interval?
It's not so much an emergency, but if an item came to the attention of CICERA after the posting of the agenda, let's say the agenda was put out on Friday for the following Wednesday meeting, on Monday or on Tuesday, CICERA receives notice of something that they think, hey, you know, the board should really look at this and make a decision quickly. On the Wednesday meeting, of course, the agenda doesn't have that item on the agenda, and so the Brown Act does allow the board to vote and decide that, number one, that the item came to the attention of CICERA or the board after the posting of the agenda, and number two, that the action, that the matter requires immediate action by the board. If there's a two-thirds vote supporting that, then the board may actually take up that item.
Let's say we just had a meeting on Wednesday today. Something happens tomorrow. How long would we have to wait until we could address that as a board?
Something happens tomorrow, under our board calendar, we would have time to put that item on the agenda for the next meeting. So it wouldn't qualify for this urgency measure because it came to CICERA's attention well before the agenda was being prepared.
Right. I suppose there was some matter of kind of time urgency, and we didn't really want to wait till the next scheduled meeting.
Oh, do you mean calling a special meeting?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's possible. That's possible under the Brown Act.
24 hours.
24. Yes.
That's 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Let me talk about, on slide 18, the civil remedies that are available. Any person may commence an action by mandamus or injunction for the purpose of obtaining a judicial determination that an action taken by a legislative body of a local agency is null and void. And prior to commencing the action, the person must make a demand of the board to cure or correct the action. So that helps the agency if somebody's critical of the process and thinks that there was a Brown Act violation, they have to make a demand on the agency and say, hey, I think you violated the Brown Act. Here's why. Under the law, they have to give the agency an opportunity to cure the problem. So briefly summarizing, the consequences of violating the Brown Act are that the court may award attorney fees and costs to the prevailing plaintiff, but also if the public agency prevails, if the court finds that the action against the agency for the alleged Brown Act violation was frivolous and lacking in merit, the court may award attorney fees and costs to the agency. Are there any questions? Well.
Not that I'm intending this, but let's say somebody's at the wrong place at the wrong time and there's an accusation in terms of defense of one person violating the Brown Act. In terms of defense, would that be our counsel or would it fall under our E&O coverage or would we be solely responsible for that? And I'm just curious.
In terms of whether trustees themselves would be covered?
Yeah, let's say somebody came up with something saying, has accusations that, let's see, a member of a board is in violation of the Brown Act on a personal basis. In terms of defense for that misdemeanor, criminal misdemeanor, and any other charges, I mean, how would that whole thing work out?
do serve my time?
Perfect.
That's a good question. I think we would have to assess the conduct and decide, was it within the scope of Sisera business, or was it something completely outside that may actually have merit? Because I don't think Sisera or the board would provide a defense to a trustee who's criminally charged with wrongdoing.
They would not.
But if it seems like, you know, this is a frivolous case, or they were acting within the scope of Sisera, they were here, you know, then we would provide a defense.
So define for me again, I just want to play this hypothetical through. Define for me again how an individual member would be criminally liable a violation of the Brown Act. They would have essentially intent, correct?
Right.
And they would also have, for example, intent to manipulate or have essentially have a serial meeting outside of the public's purview, right? Would that be? So let's say somebody accuses from the outside and says, Jay and myself have been having text messages or an email, and we sent that to the board or something like that, where somebody's pointing a finger at me saying, Will is personally going to be criminally responsible for violation of the Brown Act. What would the steps be taken by Sisera?
With a criminal allegation, that really has to be done. It's a person might make that complaint, but the process is that for a criminal case to proceed, the DA has to actually file it.
Okay.
And so it would be, you know, the state of California versus the trustee. And in that case, I don't believe Sisera would provide a defense. But if someone is alleging that a trustee violated the Brown Act in the civil case, then I think Sisera would provide a defense if they thought that the trustee was in the right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, because the reason, and I have no fears about violating, I'm very clear on the Brown Act. Thanks, Jerry. Somebody could wrongfully accuse, purposely, maliciously accuse any trustee, if, for example, a board of supervisor, of a violation of the Brown Act on a personal basis.
Now you're implicated. Now, that's great.
Right.
And make a request to the DA. What would Sisera's position be in that investigation for criminal? And then until the DA took it, and then what would it also be on a civil? I mean,
yeah, and it's a good question to ask our insurance coverage providers as well. To see if they would provide a defense.
I can offer a little bit of color on that, separating the criminal from the civil, because you're not entitled to indemnification for criminal acts. So if a criminal complaint were charged against the trustee by the DA, People versus Will, that would not be, you would not be entitled to any indemnification. If somebody accused individual board members civilly, filed a writ against you, or said you violated, confidentiality is the most easy one to pick. If you breached the confidentiality of a closed session, for example, just in went and talked to an investment manager about a prospective deal and breached the confidentiality, there might be a civil charge against you that's brought. Under state law, you're entitled, under the government code, you're entitled to indemnification by the board, generally, for acts within the course and scope of your responsibilities. But the board will always say, we'll cover, we'll provide a defense. We may do it through insurance or no insurance. But we're always going to reserve the right that if it turns out that was outside the scope of your action as a board member, we're going to come back against you for the cost of defense and any damages. Otherwise, you're going to be covered. One of the big concerns that boards have is, and while that decision is being made, are my personal assets, am I going to have to tap into my own bank account to pay for my own lawyer until that gets worked out? And many boards have now gone out and gotten fiduciary insurance coverage for that, and coverage that what they call first dollar coverage, so that the policy immediately clicks in and pays that first dollar of costs while all these things sort themselves out, so that individual board member can out of pocket. But under state law, you're indemnified and entitled to a defense for anything you do as a board member, unless it's something that can't be insured, like personal torts. If you hit your neighbor, you know, as a personal tort like that, or right. a criminal violation, those things are not covered. But everything else you do in discharging your responsibility as a board member is covered.
Thank you.
Would that even hold true for a grand jury investigation?
It extends to investigations as grand well. Jury. Regulatory investigations or grand jury investigations. So that question you were asking, Will, about up to the point that DA decides to bring charges, if they're looking for information or
right.
they impanel the grand jury or something for misdemeanor, I don't know what they do, you would be still entitled to defense cost for that and costs of coverage.
I would be.
Through that process.
I'd be entitled to them.
You would be.
Based off
the... Now, once the DA files criminal charges, you're on your own.
Understood.
Well, they investigate you and cover it.
And when I say you, I don't mean
right.
I don't mean
anybody else.
I'm kind of thinking you.
Not me. Anyway. By the depth of his hypothetical questions.
No, it brings up the question of somebody could
not to the rest of us.
No. Somebody could completely erroneously accuse you, Jerry, of
no, not me. This, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to get this check in here real fast.
Jerry, I just paid a cash.
It's right.
Well, that, you know, that's the exposure that you have. I mean, you're doing a public service. You come on here for $100 a meeting, and you expose yourself to that kind of liability. You want to know that you're covered. And so it's a great question to ask. And you should be covered, and you shouldn't be exposed. And people in California say, unless you're doing something heinous, you're entitled to be covered.
Karen, in your experience with the board, do you have any good examples of things you've had to deal with under the Brown Act, just to illustrate some of it at ground level?
Yes, it's all been good.
She can't discuss it.
I did check the policy just in case you were going to ask this, Will. Any Russian collusion is excluded specifically.
I can tell you from the staff level that we train our staff on these requirements, and we have multiple eyes looking at things to make sure that in terms of process, the agenda being done, the description on the agenda, the posting it on the website on time, all of that is being carefully watched and training is given. So we try to do our best to make sure that the Brown Act is being followed. Today we had an interesting situation because the Brown Act, I didn't cover it on the slides, but allows board members to teleconference in to the board meeting, and there's special requirements. It's not easy, and it's costly. Requirements are that the agenda has to be posted there in, where is it, Torrey Pines? In a public place. They have to have a meeting there. Their conference room has to be open to the public. We have to confirm that with the hotel. I know Christina and her staff did a lot of work on that, on making sure that that all gets coordinated, so that we're not in violation of the Brown Act and we're able to accommodate these board members out there who wanted to attend via teleconferencing.
You covered it last time in the slides.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, I thought you'd remember, so I didn't need to cover it again.
And also for a teleconference, there does have to be a quorum of members here.
Quorum.
There has to be a quorum here to be able to do that.
Yep.
You've heard in closed session before Karen say, you know, time out, we can't talk about that. Well, she's invoking the provision of the Brown Act that says only certain things can be talked about in closed session.
And sometimes, too, during the last section of the agenda where we have staff comment or trustee comment or professional comments, sometimes, you know, we're carefully watching to make sure that it's just information being presented, or if there's staff direction, you know, that can happen, but that we don't have a full-on discussion about things.
Any other questions for Karen or Harvey? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 9.